Welcome to The Warcast, your geopolitical briefing that tells you what you need to know, when you need to know it. The Warcast is for War on the Rocks members only. Spread the word and tell your friends and colleagues to sign up at warontherocks.com/subscribe.
The number of hate groups in the United States has been increasing since 2014, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. Emboldened by white nationalists in the White House, we have seen individuals marching in public wearing swastikas and paraphernalia of neo-Confederate groups, something that seemed impossible, or at least exclusive to a much smaller fringe of extremists just a few years ago. And that's before we get to issues like sovereign citizens, Confederate statues, and anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. Right-wing extremism appears to be thriving and on the ascent. I'm speaking with Mark Bukavage of the Anti-Defamation League. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you very much. I'm happy.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. Is my reading of this landscape correct? Are we seeing an increase in right-wing extremism, or is it just making the news more than it had previously?
Well, I will say that it is more a perception of an increase than an actual increase when you look at it from the overall. Which is not to say that there, in certain segments of the extreme right, there hasn't been an increase. What we can largely say, you know, first it's important to note that the extreme right in the United States comprises a lot of different movements. In particular, it consists of two main spheres, anti-government extremists and white supremacists, and then several different varieties of single issue extremists as well. And so at any given moment, some of those segments could be rising or falling. And usually, it's always the case that some are on the ascent and some are stagnant and some are decreasing. What we really saw in 2008, 2009 was a major increase in a major surge of right-wing extremism that has largely persisted for the past 8 or 9 years, but was more predominant with anti-government extremism than with white supremacy. And then in the past year or so, we have seen certain segments of the white supremacist movement, particularly the alt-right, the newest segment, really grow and become particularly active and get a lot of media attention. So in some respects, the white supremacists are catching up to the anti-government extremists.
Does this have something to do with, I don't know, there's the issues like Richard Spencer, who is a leader of, I guess, the alt-right, when he was first comes to some prominence, there's a lot of discussion about how well he dressed and how well he came across, in speaking, not the ideas, but in his presentation. Does that potentially explain why we're seeing more than we had before?
Well, there are a couple reasons why we're seeing more coverage, and especially with regard to the alt-right. The first is that the alt-right began several years ago. It's quite new compared to all the other right-wing extremist movements currently active. It up until this past year, it has been overwhelmingly an online phenomenon. And Twitter was one of the venues where it was active, and journalists are extremely active on Twitter. And so when they encountered the alt-right on Twitter and they encountered people like Spencer on Twitter, it was natural for them to start covering that. The second factor is that the alt-right, which is of the different segments of the white supremacist movement, probably the most political in nature, in some respects, really sort of got involved with the 2016 presidential election, and the media coverage of the alt-right getting involved with that and all the publicity that came from that allowed the alt-right itself to grow and thus get more publicity. And it became sort of a vicious ascending circle with publicity allowing growth, allowing more publicity. And then the third factor, the post-election factor, is because the alt-right was so excited and energized and emboldened by the election and all the attention that it got, and some alt-right figures told reporters, in October 2016 that even if Donald Trump loses, we won because we got so much attention and publicity. It was natural for them to start moving into the real world, the physical world, after the election. And so you start seeing some alt-right real-world groups form, and you start seeing them take part in marches and rallies and other real-world activities that previously they had largely avoided. And that both got publicity and generated some major incidents, such as at Charlottesville, where you have a large alt-right event that culminates in a murder of a anti-racist protester. And so and some of these other protests have been surrounded by violence and shootings and so forth as well. And so it's these sort of three factors that have allowed this sort of combination of increased activity and increased publicity, which has, you know, given a lot of attention to this whole issue. I will say that, you know, as someone who's looked at the extreme right for over the past 20 years, traditionally the media undercovers right-wing extremist violence and incidents. And to some degree, when you get away from the alt-right and white supremacists, that still is being undercovered. And so I'm actually glad there's been more attention to this problem, because it is a real problem, although I'm not necessarily glad that, you know, there are people out there writing stories every time Richard Spencer makes a new tweet.
Yeah, right. The point about the alt-right is interesting, but beyond these beyond like the marches and the, you know, the tiki torches, I mean, obviously one of these didn't end up resulting in a murder by one of its adherents, but are we seeing an increase in right wing violence at all, or is it sort of the same as the trajectory with just the movements generally, where it's kind of steady, we're just noticing it more?
Well, it's that's a hard question to answer, actually. The way I would put it is, you know, certainly like from last year to this year, there has been an increase in right-wing violence. There were 14 murders, for example, related to right-wing extremists last year. There were 20 in 2017. However, murder statistics, extremist-related murder statistics, are volatile. And from any one year to another, they can vary considerably. And you have to look over you know, a trend of several years. And when you do, you see that right-wing extremist murders have been, you know, elevated for several years now. And actually last year was kind of was lower than normal. And so it, you know, it's, you know, there's definitely been a great deal of right-wing violence. And, you know, on ranging from, you know, all sorts of things from hate crimes to terrorism. You know, I've tracked over the past 25 years up to – I'm in the process of updating my database right now. So I am about halfway through 2017. But over the past 25 years, you know, I've documented around 155 incidents of right-wing terrorist acts, plots, or conspiracies. And the bulk of those, if you sort of plot them out, like, you know, by year, how many by year – the bulk of those occurred in either two periods, basically the period 1995 to 2000, or the period 2009 to the present day, with this sort of gap in the middle of the 2000s, where it was a lot lower. And so we are definitely, whether you're looking at murders, whether you're looking at terrorist-related incidents, whether you're looking at lesser violence, assaults, attempted murders, things like this, you know, we're definitely in a period of high activity.
You know, I see a common complaint mostly on social media that a lot of the violence perpetrated by right-wing extremists, it's rarely called terrorism, but that if a Muslim or someone of Arab descent had done the same thing, it would immediately be called terrorism. Do you think that's true? And, you know, what's the reasoning behind why some individuals are called terrorists and others not?
Well, it's absolutely true. And there are a couple reasons for it. I would say three reasons. The first reason is that there is no statute in the United States for domestic terrorism. There are several very narrowly framed statutes that have the word terrorism in them that can be applied to domestic extremists. But overwhelmingly, all the laws in the United States that refer to terrorism basically are about international terrorism. And so when someone who, or let's say a right-wing extremist or a left-wing extremist commits a terrorist act, they're not ever charged with terrorism. They may be charged with weapons or explosive charges or conspiracy charges, some combination of those. In some cases, civil rights charges. But because they're not technically charged with terrorism, there are some people who won't refer to those acts as terrorism, even though by all the standard definitions of terrorism, those acts would meet that criteria. The second reason is that for right-wing extremists, some acts of terrorism are also hate crimes. And some people tend to prefer to call them hate crimes rather than acts of terrorism, even though those terms are not mutually exclusive. And an act like the 2015 Charleston shooting spree of Dylann Roof was clearly both a hate crime and an act of terrorism. But you still have some people, when something is obviously a hate crime, they're for some reason reluctant to call it terrorism. They just prefer the label hate crime. And then the third and final reason for some people is sort of a tendency, an actual tendency to say, to when they think of terrorism, just to only think of Islamic terrorism and to try to explain away right-wing terrorism or other types of terrorism as something else. So you have three main reasons for this, two of which, it's all terminology related, so it gets kind of soft and fuzzy. Two are sort of understandable reasons why people might use other terms. And then this third one, which is sort of an irrational reason to declare that only Islamic terrorism is terrorism.
Hmm. Yeah. As you mentioned before, right-wing extremism comes in many forms. There are different ideologies that sort of fall under that umbrella. What, in your mind, is the most dangerous to American society today?
Well, there are different ways to define dangerous to American society. There are different ways that extremists can be dangerous. If you just look at deaths, right? If you look at extremist-related killings in the United States, right-wing extremists in general commit the vast majority of those. Let's say over the past 10 years, it's about 71%. And of the murders committed by right-wing extremists, the overwhelming majority are committed by white supremacists. So, by that date alone, people killing people, you'd have to say white supremacists were the most dangerous. On the other hand, if you look at the lethality of individual acts, domestic Islamic extremists in the United States in recent years have committed relatively few acts, but they have tended to be high casualty acts, right, when they have actually committed acts. And you look at the major mass casualty incidents in recent years, five deaths or more related to domestic extremists. And with the exception of the Charleston shootings, most of the others are domestic Islamic extremists. And so that's another way to measure danger. And then the third are attempts, right? Plots and conspiracies. For terrorist acts, whether they're successful or not successful. And there, you'll notice that, first of all, when you look at right-wing extremists, anti-government extremists who kill a far smaller number of people than white supremacists do are pretty much equal in terms of the number of terrorist-related plots and incidents they generate. And so that makes them dangerous in their own particular regard. And then at the same time, when you compare right-wing extremist terrorist plots and incidents in the United States to domestic Islamic extremist plots, incidents and acts, you find that they're roughly equal in number. And then when you think of the fact that Islamic extremists are so fewer in number than the United States, than right-wing extremists are, and yet they're generating basically equal numbers of terrorist plots and conspiracies, you have to really acknowledge that that's a real threat. And so, depending upon, what sort of basis sort of factual basis you're using for your to make your measurement, you know, one could argue that white supremacists or anti-government extremists or domestic Islamic extremists could all be, you know, the most dangerous in one sense or another. What I would say is that both right-wing extremists and domestic Islamic extremists represent serious threats of violence and terrorism in the United States. And, you know, trying to figure out, you know, which one of those is like slightly more serious than the other is a losing proposition, because you can't ignore either threat. They're both significant dangers, and both have to be acknowledged, and both have to be addressed, or we pay the consequences.